remember like first seeing the light machine shops and perhaps even the heavy machine shops? I mean, had you ever seen machinery on such a scale before? Like, what sort of impression did it leave?
Some of the lathes were really long. They used to do the dirty, great big shafts and rams, and I've not seen any since that big, and I probably won't again. But the heavy machine shop, they had some huge machinery. But then when you look at what they were making, and it would fill the unit where they used to build them, you know, they'd be right up in the ceiling. When I was an apprentice and there was a 39-hour working week strike, the apprentices had to go in, and the foremen were in. So all they did was give us an oil can, and if it was shiny, we had to squirt it with oil. And I can remember going up one of the building's presses with an oil can and just squirting anything shiny and giving it a wipe with a rag. But they were huge. You were going up ladders and walking along gantries and going up another ladder. They were probably 45, 50 foot high. The one big boring machine was right next door to where they built them, probably because it was easier just to take it off the boring machine, put it next to the machine, and then build it from there. But I mean, some of the nuts that they used to screw cut, and they were easy diameter my height, you know, they were huge. And like I say, I'd probably never see anything like that now.
So it's awesome, the size of these things.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, some of the lathes, I bet the bed was 50, 60 foot long. I know they had two of them, and if they put a cut on, it would take days to get from the tailstock end down to the headstock. And then they'd be roughing, they'd be finishing. They had like a grinding attachment, and you know, it just took so long to get from one end to the other. They were massive.
But you started on the smaller stuff in the apprentice school, as you were saying, starting on things like the tap wrenches and the steel cube as well. A lot of people, when Bert Ravenhill, who was in apprentice, ran the apprentice school back in the sort of 40s, 50s, started on that steel cube. Can you just describe what you actually had to do on your steel cube?
The steel cube. Now, you got your cube as a bit of sawn bar. So you would file the two ends that had been cut, and then you would polish, and there was a dimension as well to work to, because they were going to be used later on for the V-blocks. But basically all you had to do was make this block 102 millimetre. You'd file it, you'd polish it, and then you'd get it on an angle plate and a surface plate, and you would do your figure of eight with marking blue, and you would scrape it, and according to the book it says plus or minus 0.05 millimetre, 0.01 millimetre, which is quite a tight tolerance. 0.1 is 4 thou, so that's a 2 thou and a 4/10 tolerance. So you have to get it pretty good. When you finished, it would go to either Chris Cruz or Marcus Jarvis, and they would check it, and my instructor's comment is satisfactory. But later on, you had to get the block right, because later on they gave you a drawing for a pair of V-blocks which were to be made from the block. So you would put a V in the top and a V in the bottom. You'd put slots down the side, and then you would mill it in half. So you had your two V blocks.
And you can you describe what those V blocks would then have been used for?
The V blocks would have been used if you were clamping something round and putting a hole in horizontally to the diameter. They are useful bits of kit. And like I say, I'm still using mine today.
So these are the sort of jobs that you'd be doing in the apprentice school. Can you describe what a typical day would be like? You'd start at 7:30 and then you'd go on to work on these machines. What else would you do?
It was very much the same as working on a lathe as I am now. You know, it might be a different machine, or you might be welding, but they'd show you what to do. If you're on a milling machine, I mean, by the time you've done 12 months there, you should have a pretty good idea. Drawing that they'd given you to work on, you get your drawing and your bit of steel, and you had to make the steel the same as the drawing. And like I say, it was all drawn up, and you'd be marked on it, and they'd inspect it in the office. And
were they quite hard taskmasters, Chris Cruz and Marcus Jelf? So you've got a satisfactory there. And I remember flicking through your books earlier this week and seeing some comment, I would have liked to have seen you do you draft out differently. This would have helped you. Does that kind of sum up how hard it was to please your instructors?
They could be. They were really nice blokes, but they would lay the line down. You know, there was no mucking about. If you didn't know how to do it, they would willingly show you. I mean, Chris Cruz, I can remember him leaning over me vice and filing away, and that's how we do it, you know. But
and what did you sort of get to know your instructors as people, or were they sort of more, was there a bit more of a division there?
There was the division then. I mean, I see Chris Cruz now, and I'll chat with him for 10 minutes or whatever, but at the time the instructors wore foreman's overalls, and so they were quite senior, and especially at Fieldings as well. I mean, when I came out on the shop floor, there was two foremen that I worked under. There was a Reg Court and a Brian Mason, and you wouldn't mess with either of them. You know, they were like one step down from God, or maybe two steps down. Upstairs in the office was one step down from God. So, you know, you had to watch what you were doing. But you could, as I got older, I think we did start larking about a little bit more, but no more than anyone else.
So there was a bit of discipline and there was a bit of fun in the apprentice school. Can you recall some of the fun times then that you had there?
Well, the one time I was in the tool room and one of the guys shouted down to me, "Quick, get out the way, Quarter's coming. He's looking for you." So I couldn't go anywhere because I'm trapped. I'm in a dead end. So I got underneath a bench. And Reg Court must have walked in, and all the other blokes were pointing at the bench to me, but I couldn't see them. All of a sudden, Courty bends down, and he's looking sideways at me. And just off the top of my head, I said, "It's no good, Reg, I can't find it." To which he swore, "Get back over that machine shop." Something like that. So I just got out and scuttled away, you know, slunk away. He had me.
And thinking about the guys that you would have been working and larking about with, did you tended to be closer to the Fieldings boys rather than the guys that had come in from other companies? Is that the case?
It is with John Seddon. I mean, some of the other guys. The one guy was doing fitting. Tony Sysom, he was on fitting, and the other guy was doing welding. So once the first 12 months were out of the way and we sort of went our separate ways, but I would say I probably got to knock about the Sorrow boys more. One of the Sorrow boys ended up being my best man when I got married. So
at the end of the first year in the apprentice school, would you have had exams or anything like that to mark the progress from being an apprentice to sort of moving on from the first year, or was it a seamless move into the shops?
It was a pretty seamless move. You did, I think the first year after the first year at Tech, you took an exam, and I think that was. So
then you got your part one City and Guild certificate then?
Yeah, so 1881, yeah. Yeah, City and Guild's general and mechanical basic engineering craft studies. So we did quite well in that one, credit. The second and the third year were one long course. There was exams along the way, but that was for the part two in the City and Guilds, and then part three, machining and coursework assessment. There was exams at Tech, but not really at buildings. When I first went in the light machine shop, they put me on this old lathe, just stick him out the way sort of thing, where we can't do much damage. And you just picked it up as you went along. If you got stuck, you asked, and the other guys would come and help you, or if you saw your foreman, or there was a personnel officer as well called Barry Degg, and he would come down and you could ask him anything. He was a nice chap. But they'd give you a job to do, and Reg Court would say, right, do it this way, turn that, face that, turn this. And then when it's finished, get it on inspection. But like I say, any of the guys would come and help. Freddie Perkins was... He's the one name that I used to come and get to help. I think I did about 12 months on this beat up old lathe. I think it was a TOS, but I'm not sure. TOS. And then I went on a Aikigai Japanese lathe, and that was pretty new. I think it was only about 2 or 3 years old at the time. And everything was working, and, you know, that was a really good lathe. And that was the lathe I stayed on until they closed the machine shop.